I'm Peter Suderman, and this is The Reason Rundown, the podcast to end your week. One Reason journalist, one big story, once a week. Thanks for listening. In July, President Joe Biden delivered a speech at a decommissioned coal-fired power plant in Somerset, Massachusetts, following record-breaking heat waves in both the United States and Europe.
The blistering heat wave blanketing the U.S. continues to crank out record temperatures.
Terribly hot. I mean, I can't handle it.
In his remarks, he said that climate change is an emergency and a clear and present danger to the United States.
We need to act. Just take a look around. Right now, 100 million Americans are under heat alert. 100 million Americans.
This wasn't the official declaration of a new federal emergency the progressive climate activists had hoped for, but it was a form of lip service to their demands. Biden was placing climate change and energy policy at the top of the Democratic Party's agenda. Now, less than a month later, Democrats appear poised to pay much more of the lip service to the issue.
I spoke with both Senator Schumer and Manchin and offered my support for a historic agreement.
A legislative deal between Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, would put $370 billion in new federal spending toward tackling climate change. That deal, dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act, is a successor to the Build Back Better spending plan that Democrats fought over and failed to pass over the last year.
I'm not going to negotiate against myself as to what should and shouldn't be in it.
What's not to like? It's a bad bill.
$370 billion is less than progressive activists originally wanted, but it nonetheless represents both the single biggest component of the Inflation Reduction Act and the largest commitment to federal climate spending in U.S. history. The bill is yet to pass, but Democrats are already saying it could be a pivotal moment for climate and energy policy, as well as for the political fortunes of Joe Biden's flagging presidency.
And then the investments we're making on the renewable sides and all the new technology, there's some other opportunities if we just keep our minds open and work together.
Here to discuss this with me today is Reason Science correspondent Ron Bailey. Ron is the author of multiple books, including The End of Doom, Environmental Renewal in the 21st Century, and he's a longtime chronicler of the ins and outs of climate policy for Reason. Ron, let's just start by digging into the climate spending in this new legislation. $370 billion is a lot of money, even if it's not quite as much as progressive activists wanted. In broad strokes, how would that money be spent and what would it do?
The Inflation Reduction Act, the climate provisions of that act, will basically be aiming to cut the amount of carbon dioxide emissions in the United States from their current levels by 20% more. Essentially, it'll be trying to get below 40% of what our peak was in the year 2005. And so it's divided up in various ways. Some of it will be going to support electric vehicles as a tax credit, basically, as an incentive subsidy of $7,500 per vehicle. They're also going to be providing production and tax credits for wind and solar power as well. And that will be, for the first time, extended for a 10-year period. Previously, it had been going from year to year. And a whole variety of other actions will be taken, for example, to try to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the agriculture sector, and also to help build up, if you will, sinks like increased forestry, that kind of thing. It's a fairly comprehensive bill.
So even without this policy in place, the United States was already on track to cut emissions by something like 20% by 2030. The goal here, if I understand you correctly, is to accelerate the pace of reduction, the track we're already on, through a series of tax credits and subsidies. So let me ask you, do you think that this is a good approach? Is it likely to work?
I think it is likely to work. I've done a pretty rough, quick analysis of how they might achieve these particular goals. What's interesting about it is that the bill is basically a bunch of carrots. They're offering industries and consumers and so forth incentives to behave in ways to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Previously, there have been a lot of regulations that were proposed that would actually punish people for emitting carbon dioxide. For example, the regulations that were proposed under the Clean Power Plan under Obama were basically punishing utilities if they didn't cut their emissions, then they would suffer certain kinds of consequences. But this is essentially saying to people, here's some money if you will do what we would like you to do with regard to cutting your emissions. I think that's probably a better approach. It's semi-market in its way than heavy-handed, top-down regulations forcing various types of technologies onto people.
At the same time, this is an awful lot of federal spending that is being delivered toward industry groups. There is a fair amount of picking winners going on here. And that brings me to one of the questions that I have, which is, there's something different about this bill, which is that unlike previous big picture climate legislation, this one actually looks like it is going to pass. Now, maybe it won't. We still don't know for certain, right? Anything could happen. But this one really does seem like it is on track to become law. And I wonder if there is something different sort of in the market already. And I do mean in the private sector. Politico, for example, ran a story recently basically reporting that a bunch of CEOs, Bill Gates, a lot of green energy entrepreneurs, they wanted this bill to pass because they were in favor of all the subsidies and tax breaks for their industry. Bloomberg reported that Exxon, which has often been cast as, this big climate villain destroying, the planet, actually had some good things to say about this bill. So there was industry alignment here. Why is that? Do you think that that is what made the difference in terms of potentially getting this one over the finish line?
Yes, I think that's a very great insight as to why this is going over the finish line, most likely. Industry was behind it. And largely, industry is behind it because the incentives are, if you will, carbon neutral in a certain sense. They apply to any technology that would be reducing carbon dioxide. They're not picking winners and losers in the sense of saying, you must build more wind power, you must build more solar power. It also includes incentives to keep nuclear power running, for example. Also, Exxon probably likes it because they have technologies where they're hoping they'll be able to actually capture and bury carbon dioxide and therefore also get some of the incentives. So I think that, again, the design of the bill, and I don't know, of course, how the negotiations work out, was to appeal to a much broader coalition of people who are interested in possibly addressing climate change in this way. Again, I want to stress, for the most part, and again, subsidies are quite problematic, but at least in this particular case, it's a bunch of carrots and not the kinds of top-down sticks that a lot of the activists have been promoting in the past.
So I guess I'm a little bit surprised to hear your almost, it's not enthusiasm for this.
No.
At the same time, you're telling me that a lot of the worst ideas that climate activists had pushed for were not included in this, and that what's left is subsidies, tax credits that might actually do something to reduce emissions. Do you think that this ends up being an efficient way to go about doing this? I guess I think of this in terms of, I've written a lot about film tax credits that states give to Hollywood. Wow. And what you see with those is that states say, well, look, they're bringing business to our state. We're creating jobs. And it's true in some sense that, like, Georgia has started a little Hollywood, on the East Coast because of their film tax credit subsidy. But what most of those studies of those subsidies say is, a lot of this stuff would have happened anyway, and all that ends up happening is that taxpayers are giving money to an industry that would have made these movies, would have created these jobs somewhere, and that it's just taking money from taxpayers to fund something that was, in most cases, already likely to succeed. Do you think that there's a similar parallel with the subsidies and tax credits that we're seeing here in the Inflation Reduction Act?
Peter, I understand your point about subsidies. They are often targeted in wasteful ways, just as you described it. There's a difference in a certain sense here is that if you think climate change is a problem, and I do think climate change is a problem, it's an externality in a certain way. How do you go about solving that problem? Economists, for example, would prefer you start putting a price on carbon and then just let the market decide which technologies can reduce the amounts of carbon that are emitted by various and sundry parts of industry sectors and so forth.
So effectively a carbon tax.
And basically a carbon tax, if you will. But that, how shall we say, the T word is a word that people in America don't like at all. And it's simply not going to happen. So then the other thing you can do, and this is what they avoid in the most cases in this bill, is you could do top-down regulations where bureaucrats sitting in Washington tell industries you must do this, that, or the other thing, regardless of whatever the costs are, and then impose those costs on the public that way. So as a kludgy second-best alternative, I think that this system of subsidies that are not picking technologies, that are not picking particular winners among the whole suite of technologies that might be able to help reduce carbon dioxide emissions, is not, it could have been a lot worse. I'll put it that way.
So let's talk about energy prices for American consumers, since you've brought this up, right? People don't like taxes on carbon, in part because that makes gasoline, it makes electricity, it makes their energy prices higher. And this bill, of course, is coming in the wake of a big spike in gasoline prices over the summer. Now, those prices have come down from their peak, but obviously energy is still quite expensive. Where I live, gas is still over $4 a gallon. What downstream effects do you think that this spending package will have on gas and electricity prices in the short term and in the long term?
In the short term, it's kind of hard to tell, but in the long term, the idea, and I think that this may well work out to be the case, is that essentially the goal is to drive the price of low carbon and no carbon sources of energy below that of fossil fuels. In other words, to make electricity produced by renewable power, for example, or nuclear power, cheaper and cheaper and cheaper over time so that fossil fuels fall out of the economy over time. One of the possible ramifications of this is that the United States will sometime in this decade reach the peak of, for example, gasoline usage. And if that's the case, demand for gasoline falling, that means that gasoline prices will also fall over time. Again, it's hard to predict how these macroeconomic things will play out over time. But if the goal of making renewable power, for example, or nuclear power, those kinds of things cheaper over time is achieved by these subsidies, and that's the goal, then I think that ultimately energy prices may, in fact, be lower over time.
So I obviously take your point about climate change being a real problem, and things like carbon taxes are not politically possible, even if you think they are good ideas, which we don't need to get into that. I know that you have written that the ideal solution from an economic perspective to climate change would be a carbon tax. But again, I just want to go back to this idea. If gasoline use is falling and other alternative energy sources are going to become more widely used and more efficient and more affordable on their own, why do we need subsidies here? Why do we need tax credits to get these things off the ground? It seems like these are just technologies in their nascent stage. Technologies always start somewhat expensive, and then as they are more adopted, they become less expensive and more widely used, and that's sort of the natural progression of things. Do we really need $370 billion, which Democrats, by the way, are saying this is not all that they want. They want a lot more money to be spent over time. Do we really need to be building a subsidized sector to make all of this happen?
I completely agree with you that we don't necessarily need to do that. The question is, how serious do you think the problem of climate change is? The goal of the subsidies is to accelerate, if you will, the switch to no carbon and low carbon energy sources over time. We are on a glide path, I do believe, to making no carbon renewable power cheaper than fossil fuels. But again, the question is, how big a problem do you think it is? And as someone who's been covering this issue since 1992, when I was at the first Earth Summit, I changed my mind about how serious a problem it is some time ago. Initially, I thought that climate change was not a big problem. I thought it was an alarmism of the environmental movement. And I wrote a book called Eco-Scam in 1994, where I basically denounced it. But over the years, I've been covering the science, if you will, of this for so many years. And slowly but surely, I changed my opinion about it. I think it could become a significant problem. And it's an externality. It's a kind of thing that we're basically, no one is pricing the damages that are being caused by climate change. So there has to be some way to do that. So one of the arguments for subsidies would be, and I'm not necessarily endorsing it, but it's something to be thought about. One of the arguments for the subsidies is that fossil fuels would remain, without those subsidies, much cheaper than alternative sources of energy, the renewable sources, for example, or nuclear power, which is my preferred version of steady power, of low carbon power. And you need to jumpstart, if you will, the technological revolution in order to outcompete fossil fuels over time. Again, I'm not sure I'm going to endorse that, but it's not a completely unreasonable argument.
Since you bring up the effects of climate change, let's talk about the weather. So This legislation follows not only a big spike in gas prices, but also a summer of heat waves across the United States and in Europe. Now, obviously, climate is not the weather exactly. At the same time, Democratic politicians, including Joe Biden, climate activists have increasingly connected climate change to the weather. Biden, in the speech in Massachusetts, linked climate change to hurricanes, wildfires, global warming. So it's really hot out today in Washington, D.C. We have seen what feels like an increase in extreme weather happening over the past, you know, decade or so in the United States. But I wonder, is this package actually going to make a difference that we can see and feel? Can we really expect to notice a difference in the weather, in weather patterns, as a result of what is, on the one hand, a very big spending package, and on the other hand, this is not like a sort of wholesale revolution in the economy or in energy or anything like that. This is just a big package of subsidies and spending that the energy industry quite likes, as far as I can tell. So is it going to be less hot? Are there going to be fewer big storms? Or are we mostly just going to end up subsidizing energy producers?
Well, let's put it this way. First of all, I'd like to point out that the climate is changing. And in fact, what we can find is the world has warmed up by about 1.1 degree centigrade. That's about 2 degrees Fahrenheit over the last century or so. What you have is an increase in heat waves. Now, people can point out that it's been hot before and other times earlier in the 20th century, for example. But the thing is that the heat waves are increasing in frequency. So we can, in fact, see an effect. Now, the question, will this bill solve that problem? The answer is clearly no. We call it global warming for a reason. It's a global problem. But the question then is, in fact, adopting this entirely would probably reduce the amount of temperatures to be expected. If the United States just by itself did this and nobody else did anything about it, it would reduce it by less than a tenth of a degree from what it was otherwise going to be in the year 2100. So no, that's not gonna, this is not going to solve that problem.
I want to ask you about the politics of this. Over the past 5-10 years, we have seen climate activism come to the fore of the progressive activist movement, right? I mean, the left flank of the Democratic Party has really put climate policy at the center of everything. And the obvious way that they have done that is through the Green New Deal and its various permutations, all of which basically said climate policy is the number one issue, but also every other issue is climate policy. And various estimates for the Green New Deal were that it was like, you know, something like a $90 trillion. I mean, just completely insane numbers that made no sense. Obviously, the climate spending in the Inflation Reduction Act is not the Green New Deal. And yet, I wonder if you see a kind of continuity, or maybe lack thereof, between the Green New Deal, between the sort of climate activists left's prioritization of climate change over everything else, and what we're seeing with the Inflation Reduction Act, which is, again, not the Green New Deal and not remotely comparable in terms of scale, but it is this kind of interesting package of tax hikes on corporations, healthcare, and climate spending, right? It is the whole Democratic Party activist enchilada all in one package with climate at the center of it. So do you think that there is a through line there that you can trace, you know, back to the Green New Deal and back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's climate activism here that gave us, in the end, a bill that that is designed basically just to subsidize a bunch of green energy producers?
There is a through line, you're right about that, between the Green New Deal and this climate package. But one of the things I want to remind your listeners of is what the activists really wanted to do with climate. And Naomi Klein, the activist, in her book, This Changes Everything, put it out very bluntly that the great thing about climate change is that we can now get rid of capitalism. And she was very clear about that, is this gives us a hammer with which to beat down all of those things that we dislike in public and social policy. And the progressives have been trying to use that this entire time. The good news is that most of the American public hasn't bought it. They basically can see clearly what the activists are trying to do. And I do think it's the sort of fringe progressives that are trying to use it. But they're basically saying capitalism is so polluting the environment that we must destroy capitalism and enact all of these social programs that we've all been desiring for other reasons for decades now. And this doesn't do that. I mean, it does have the you know, the healthcare component and so forth. But essentially, this is a much more modest proposal. And again, focusing on the climate aspects of it, it's a bunch of carrots trying to persuade people to adopt policies that would help the trajectory of climate change. And has not gone the full Green New Deal, which basically had every bit of the progressive wish list on it, which, you know, universal health care, free education in college, all unions all the time. I mean, it was just an amazing bill where they basically claimed that climate change required their entire social revolution, social and political revolution, and it's completely false.
Do you think that there is a danger that this empowers the climate left in some way, that it sort of, that this ends up being a stepping stone towards maybe not the end of capitalism, but a more radical approach? This policy was one that the Democratic activists really pushed for in a way that didn't quite make sense politically, at least just sort of with the state of the country, right? You look at prioritization polls amongst voters, and voters just do not prioritize this stuff at all. This was not designed to shore up the Democrats' electoral fortunes. Instead, it was designed to shore up Democrats and Joe Biden's reputation with their own party, with activists inside the Democratic coalition. And so I wonder if, in some ways, this represents a shift toward giving those people more power, and if the Democratic Party is going to end up becoming more enthrall to the progressive climate left.
Well, I suppose that's a possibility. I'm not very good at parsing politics on this. But another way I think about this is that this could be one and done. But essentially, the American public will go, all right, we've addressed climate change now. Let's move on to something else. We don't want anything else to be done. And it could be essentially, all right, this is America's climate policy, at least for the next two or three electoral cycles. And then we'll find out if it works or not.
So perhaps it heads off something worse.
Yes, I think that that's a more likely scenario, is that essentially people are going to go, we don't need to revisit this topic. We've already addressed it. It's done.
I will admit I'm somewhat skeptical. At the same time, I know you've been following all of this much more closely and for much longer than I have. So I want to just ask you one final question here. You have made an not a case for this legislation, but you have said, well, maybe it's sort of second best. It's not as terrible as it could have been. But you are somebody who, as you said, changed your mind about global warming, about the threat that it poses, about the urgency. So I just want to ask, is there a better policy? Ron Bailey's in charge. What is the Bailey plan? And your argument to libertarians, why is this the libertarian solution?
The case for libertarians to addressing global climate change is that it's an externality. And basically, it's an unpriced harm that is occurring across the world. Fortunately, it's not a huge problem right now, but it could become a significant problem if it's not addressed over the course of the next century, I believe. And so what we do need to do is to put a price on it. My preferred way to do that would be to impose a carbon tax that declines over time at the mine head and the wellhead of all fossil fuels. And it goes through the economy and essentially becomes allocated most efficiently through technological and market changes over time. And what I would do with the money is collected that way is to provide those as a monthly check to every American, an equal check. And what you find out is that by doing that is that the people who are below the median income actually get a higher income. And therefore, it helps address the problem they would have to be paying more for gasoline, electricity, et cetera, at least temporarily. And the reason I favor that, as opposed to another way that people tried to do this, is to, if you will, divvy up the atmosphere and create, if you will, carbon credits, and you trade those in markets. Having watched now for years the Europeans do this, that market is a complete failure. What you find is that it's fairly corrupt, that industries game it, and they're not actually getting a lot of carbon emissions reductions out of it. And if the Europeans can't pull off a carbon market, then to expect the entire world to do it is just crazy. The Chinese, the Indians, the Indonesians, the South Africans are simply not going to be able to participate in a fair and good way. So I think a carbon tax is a good step.
I suppose, looking at the European example, I worry that the subsidies in the Inflation Reduction Act, if they end up going into effect, don't create a lot of corruption necessarily, but do end up similarly being gamed by industry and not producing a lot of actual carbon reduction. But that is all the time we have to talk about this week. This was fascinating. If you want to learn more, you can read Ron's article at Reason.com. Are the Inflation Reduction Act's climate goals plausible? As always, if you like this show, please remember to subscribe and recommend it to friends. And if you like Reason's work generally, you can support us at Reason.com/donate. That's Reason.com/donate. I'm Peter Suderman, and this has been the Reason Rundown.